Hey Dharma friends, I think you all are now back to the typical conventional world. So we were discussing Sabbasava Sutta as the Sutta topic for this short Dharma sermon. And Sabbasava Sutta, actually we started last time, basically available in Majjhima Nikaya, dealing with taints. Basically, Buddha explains various levels of defilements operating in our mind, and certain defilements are easy to recognize and certain are difficult to recognize, and sometimes they can be only recognized when they are coming to the surface of the mind, and there are certain others which we can't recognize because they are very much like hidden, they are latent. So therefore, dealing with defilements is one interesting subject coming under the various aspects of Dhamma. And without really recognizing one's defilements, one cannot purify one's mind. So in this Sabbasava Sutta, Buddha directly make a statement, Janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayang vadami no ajanato no apassato. Where Buddha mentions that only for the person who can see, who can recognize the taints, to him that I can say the purification is possible, the removing of taints is possible. So therefore we can understand that recognizing one's defilement is a crucial aspect of Dhamma. So knowing that at this very moment, okay, the mind is lustful. At this very moment, the mind is resentful. Or at this moment, the mind is going through a jealousy. Mind is going through sort of entanglement, confusion. At the moment, mind is sort of filled with loving kindness. At the moment, the mind is filling with, say, faith. So likewise, we should be able to come back to ourselves and look at the mind. So at that time, if we are able to recognize whatever the form, it may be a positive or wholesome thought, or it may be an unwholesome thought. So this is a kind of a self-revelation. This is a kind of a recognition that we can do by carefully observing our mind. So as you all know, immediately looking at the mind is difficult because these thoughts are very subtle. And they may be happening one after the other in a very rapid succession. So in such situation, it is difficult to recognize thoughts. So one has to develop mindfulness starting with Kayanupassana. So that is in a way an easy approach where we can start looking at the body so that we can directly recognize various bodily movements, various bodily phenomena. And in a way, it contributes to develop mindfulness, and it contributes to develop the concentration, and again, it helps to develop wisdom. So as we are developing mindfulness using body, then it may further enhance, and we may be even able to develop mindfulness using various feelings. And as we move forward, we may be able to recognize the mind as well. It happens automatically. Where our mindfulness improves, it's gradually we are in a position to recognize various bodily phenomena, maybe various bodily processes, and able to recognize various anatomical parts of the body. So likewise, in many different ways, Buddha asks us to develop mindfulness using the body. As I said, it improves our mindfulness and the clarity of the mind, and again, the understanding about the body, and not only that, it helps us to calm down the mind. And again, if you consider the rate of thoughts coming to the mind starts to reduce, say for example, when you start your meditation say several years ago or several months ago, assume that your mind had 100 thoughts per minute, because thoughts are very rapid. But after a while, after continuous practice, it may reduce to, say, 60 thoughts per minute. So that indicates one almost like one thought per second, but later it may be 30 thoughts per 1 minute. It may be 20 thoughts per 1 minute, per 1 minute. It may be 10 thoughts per 1 minute. So that indicates slowly, slowly, our rate of thoughts or the frequency of thoughts starts to diminish. So ultimately, there could be a possibility that you may encounter total calmness in the mind, total quietude in the mind. So it may happen, say, while in Anapanasati, it may happen while you are engaged with rising and falling, or it can even happen while you are in walking session. So you are paying close attention to each and every step while walking. And if you notice, probably your mind has now calmed down. There is no inner chatter. So it's a very interesting experience where you are able to calm down the mind and again relax the mind. It's very much like you have reduced your burden, and now the clarity of mind has fairly improved. On such situation, actually, we have some extent to our, we have some control to some extent to our mind. Previously, our thoughts are simply taking us for a ride and we have no control at all. So basically, the craving and various defilements are dominating the mind. But right now, we may be able to recognize various thoughts appearing in the mind. So on such context, we can look into Sabbasava Sutta, where Buddha is telling us that we should clearly recognize all these various stains. Only for such person it is possible to dilute these stains or to ultimately eradicate, uproot these stains. So knowing, seeing these stains is crucial. It's extremely important. So Buddha talks about three main stains: kamasava, bhavasava, ajjasava. Kamasava is the sensual desires, sensual lust towards the body, towards the outside content. And then bhavasava is a desire to exist, to continue. And avijjasava is a taint related to the ignorance. And sometimes there are four asavas are mentioned, where ignorance is divided to two categories called ignorance and ditti, avijja and ditti, dittasava and avijjasava. So there are many aspects here. So recognizing these defilements, so these asavas available in the mind, is difficult. What we typically do is, based on these asavas, there may be sort of obsessive thoughts happening in the mind. There may be unwholesome thoughts happening in the mind. So at that time we can recognize, okay, there's a lustful thought. So this lustful thought has arisen because there's a tendency of lust in the mind. Or there is a taint of lust in the mind. Or if there is anger available in the surface level of the mind, at that time we are recognizing anger. And we can understand, okay, this too is coming because of the kamasava. And actually avijjasava always actually there, because none of the defilements are possible without avijja, without ignorance. So avijja is a kind of an inherent part of each and every defilement. Now, in order to uproot various asavas, in order to remove all these taints, Buddha gives us seven criterions or seven methods, seven strategies. And they are Buddha give in many different aspects. It is not a single method that Buddha is giving. It's a kind of a prescription of many different methods. So don't think that these prescriptions or these methods we have to practice in a linear order. First of all, one has to practice, say, dasana pahatabba. Then we have to go to seeing or using wisely, patisevana pahatabba. Then one has to endure things, be patient with things. Don't think like that. Rather, any of these strategies can be used based on the circumstance. Say, for example, you are traveling by a car. So at that time, suppose you stuck in a traffic jam. So at that time, So there could be many different strategies you could apply. Otherwise, you might get angry. At that time, say for example, you can practice adhivasana pahata, be patient with the situation, because you can understand there is no other way to go out or to go quickly other than just wait till other vehicles move. So at that time, we have to be patient. If we are becoming impatient, then we get into trouble. There are a lot of agitation coming to the mind. We get angry. We start to scold. We start to talk with many others, and likewise, we confuse the whole situation. But if we are able to be patient with the situation, then our mind is calmed down. So likewise, all these many different strategies Buddha has mentioned, where we can employ, we can use any of these according to the situation. So first method mentioned here is Dasana Pahatabha. So this basically depends on how we think, how well we think, how correctly we think, how skillfully we think. So thinking in a way is a kind of a skill. So if we think wrongly, then our mind get further confused. So we get into big trouble, and we can even become obsessive, and we can even become depressed because of thinking. And we might even aggravate the situation because of wrong way of thinking. But on the other hand, if we know how to skillfully think, what are the types of matters to ponder? So at that situation, it indicates that if we are able to skillfully think, there's a possibility to remove already arisen taints, and we can avoid arising of unarisen taints. So this in a way is mentioned as Yoniso Manasikara and Ayoniso Manasikara. So Yoniso Manasikara is sometimes translated as wise attention. So we know how to manage our mind, how to point or direct our mind, so that we may not simply stuck at the surface, rather we are able to penetrate. We are able to see deeply. We are able to see the sources. We are able to see the roots. So this is the meaning of Yoniso Manasikara. But on the other hand, Ayoniso Manasikara simply keeps us in the surface. We are not being able to look at deep, so that we get entangled in the surface information or surface beauty. We can never go deep. But if we want to go deep, if we want to go to the source, causes or roots, there we have to employ Yoniso Manasikara. So here in this first section, Buddha says the wise person know how to think, and he know what to think, and he knows what not to think. Since he know what is appropriate to think, he may think in that line. And since he know what is not appropriate to think, what is harmful to think, he does not think in that line. But on the other hand, another person who doesn't know how to think, who is not skillful in thinking, does not know what to think, and does not know what is harmful to think. Therefore, what he does is he may be thinking what is harmful to him, and he is not thinking what is useful to him. So as a result, a lot of taints are arising. Already arisen taints are improving, escalating, and unarisen taints are tend to arise. So he is further enhancing or improving the defilements. He is further improving the taints. So he can never go beyond. So he get further and further entangled, bound to the samsara. So we discussed the negative side on last day, where kind of a typical unworldly, sorry, typical worldly person who is with lot of sakkayaditti, lot of personality view, he always think in terms of a person, in terms of an I. So I component is fairly emphasized, and he always use the I component and always think in terms of an individual. How I was, how I am now, how I will be. So likewise, he always think with respect to I, and he get entangled. Again and again, mind get frustrated, mind feels burdened, and when he thinks about the future, he always feel uncertain, doubt, and afraid, fearful, because there's an eye to protect. So, but on the other hand, if we consider, and just to add another word, because of this wrong way of thinking, ayonisa manasikara, he get entangled in various wrong views, michaditi. So therefore Buddha says, so if you want to, if someone is thinking like this, so ultimately he may get entangled, he may get confused, he may get lost in a thicket of views, wrong views. He may get confused, and ultimately his mind is utterly confused. Now, on the other hand, if we consider the positive aspect, where if one knows Buddha's teaching, if one is now trying to know one's own mind, and again trying to understand how this mind works, and at least try to recognize various thoughts, and was in a position to calm down the mind and to reduce the frequency of thoughts. Now he can recognize one thought after the other very clearly, and he might even being able to recognize various gaps between thoughts, so that he can clearly recognize various thoughts, how a thought arises and how a thought disappear. So likewise, now fair amount of clarity of mind is available for him. Now on such a context, so he know how to think and what is suitable to think, and again he knows what is not appropriate to think. And on the other hand, even if one doesn't have such clarity of mind, even if he believes Buddha's teaching, and even if he know how at least to what is useful to think and what is harmful to think, then he can actually think what is useful and avoid thinking what is harmful. Say for example, if you get angry, suppose you are not a meditator, you are not a practitioner, but anyway you get angry, and suppose you heard from someone or you read in a book that for this anger, rather than allowing it to further grow in your mind, it is better to do some loving kindness meditation, metta meditation. So you have heard this. So since you don't know much about mindfulness, or you don't know much other technique, suppose once you are angry, suppose you take metta meditation. So you are now cultivating the mind, you are directing the mind towards the metta, loving kindness. So as a result, now the risen anger may calm down, may disappear, because now you have employed an opposite aspect of the hate, that is the loving kindness. So this, in a way, we can say that you know how skillfully to handle your mind. You know what is harmful, that is hatred is harmful. So you are not cultivating it, you are not promoting it, so that you don't think in that line. But on the other hand, you know what is useful to think, and what is useful to think in order to avoid this hatred, this anger. So that is, say, loving kindness. So you may be thinking something good about this person, but something he did in the past to your friend or to your children or to your whoever, so that they get benefited. Even though currently he is behaving in a different way, but he may be a good person sometime back. So likewise, you are now thinking something good about this person, and in that way you are able to calm down your mind. You are able to calm down your anger. Now anger has disappeared. Now this way we can see, even not in the meditation, but in the typical terms, if we know how to manage our mind, how to think effectively, think usefully, and this way we can calm down the mind. So what is the benefit is that already arisen anger has disappeared, and already arisen whatever the defilement may disappear, and unarisen defilements may not arise, because you know how to skillfully think. So likewise, if we know what is useful to think, and if we know what is harmful to think, then we can avoid what is harmful, and we can use what is beneficial. Now, in this sutta, Buddha directly take us to Four Noble Truths, because that is the, one can say that is the most useful way of thinking. Now, this is not only thinking. Actually, if we use the term thinking, it is a little gross if you are applying to Four Noble Truths. But rather, this is the most profound understanding that one can go in even in meditation, which is available in the Dhammanupassana section as Satchapabba, where Buddha talks about Four Noble Truths. So, it is entirely applicable to the mind, where one has to recognize suffering. Now, this is actually difficult to do if you don't have enough mindfulness, because in Kayanupassana section we may be developing mindfulness, but immediately we may not be able to apply Four Noble Truths. And again, in Vedanupassana we are developing mindfulness, we may not be able to recognize Four Noble Truths immediately. And again, in Chittanupassana we may recognize various thoughts, mental states, and slowly we may be able to employ this Four Noble Truths, which is available in Dhammanupassana. So what is Four Noble Truths? So here Buddha presents it in 12 aspects, where each noble truth has 3 aspects. First noble truth, that is the Dukkha Satcha, the truth related to the unsatisfactoriness, or truth related to suffering. So typically, our attitude towards suffering is to immediately get rid of it. If there is a pain, we want to get rid of it. If there is any kind of a frustration in the mind, we immediately want to get out of it. If there is any person who is coming on your way and you feel unhappy, so immediately you want to get rid of him. So this is the typical mindset we have. We want to jump, or we want to run away from suffering. We don't like suffering. But in the First Noble Truth, Buddha requests us to understand the suffering. Rather than trying to run away from it, Buddha requests us to look at it deeply. Try to understand, try to recognize. And this is in a way kind of a brave activity, where you are not now fleeing away from suffering. Rather, you are now trying to bravely recognize suffering. You are now trying to fully understand suffering. Now, this requires a fair amount of courage. And again, some patience. Because if you are extremely impatient, you can't endure suffering. You may immediately get upset, and you may immediately go and try to change the posture, or you are running away. So likewise, you are, because you are impatient. But on the other hand, if you are patiently enduring the situation and you are patiently now looking at the mind, probably you can recognize the real suffering. Say for example, there is a bodily pain. At that time, the bodily pain is one aspect, but on the other hand, there may be a lot of resistance coming from your mind refusing this pain. And you may include the term I to this process. Why is it happened to me? I am the one suffering. I am the one only going through this problem. All others are free from suffering. I am the one suffering. Why poor me? So likewise, you are imposing, you are including a self, you are imposing an individual, a person into the picture. So that makes the situation more worse than the real situation. You are adding more and more suffering to the picture, because you have invited an individual. You have included an I to the picture. But First Noble Truth requests us to see the suffering objectively. Rather than including I, how can I look at suffering as suffering? Now, this is impossible to do unless you have practiced mindfulness. Because in practicing mindfulness, you can recognize what is the object and what is the observing mind. Say for example, while walking, your foot is touching the ground and there you can recognize the touching sensation. So touching sensation is one aspect. We say it's a physical aspect, physical phenomenon. And observing mind is the mental aspect, mental phenomenon. So there are two sides, physical object and the mental knowing. Here also, in the First Noble Truth, so we have to disengage from the suffering and we should be able to look at suffering objectively. There is suffering. So this is the first statement Buddha says, Idam dukkham ariya satyam. There is suffering. So there is no I into the picture, there is no I included in the statement, but rather there is suffering. So suffering is an aspect or suffering is a phenomenon. Now one is trying to recognize, one is trying to fully understand there is suffering. Suppose there is a physical pain, so rather than you are adding a mental pain onto it, you recognize physical pain as physical pain, objectively. Suppose there is an anger in the mind, so you recognize anger as anger. Anger is producing some kind of a frustration, some kind of an unhappiness, unsatisfactoriness, suffering. And you recognize this unsatisfactoriness, this suffering, this anger. It is not your anger, it is not my anger, it is not that I am angry, but rather there is anger. So likewise, we should have that skill to look at various suffering, various unsatisfactoriness at the moment available in the mind in an objective manner. Rather than identifying with it, rather than possessing it, rather than claiming it, we are able to step back and look at it objectively. Now, if one understood that, then Buddha says, the dukkha should be understood and dukkha has been understood. So there is suffering, idam dukkham ariya satyam, there is dukkha, and then that dukkha has understood, parinyaya, and that dukkha has fully understood. So likewise, to each truth, there are three aspects. First, the statement, the theory part, and then the implementation, that is the practice, patipatti, and then the practice, how one needs to practice upon it. So in the First Noble Truth, the theory part is the suffering. There is suffering. And the practice is to fully understand it. And the result is that you have understood it. And then we can go towards the Second Noble Truth. There, if you are able to recognize suffering fully, understand suffering fully, you may be even able to recognize the cause. So what is causing this suffering? What is the reason for this suffering? So you may be able to recognize this reason, this cause. There Buddha says, the cause of suffering is tanha. So various types of tanha, craving are possible. And anyway, so we are not going to that direction because here it is in short, in summary, this information is included. So the first aspect of Second Noble Truth is that one is able to recognize the cause. There is a reason for this suffering. So you are able to recognize that reason. And what to do to this reason? So how are you going to deal with this reason, the cause? So you simply have to leave it aside. You simply have to drop it. So you simply have to let it go. So the desire, the cause of suffering has to be let go of. Rather than you are promoting it, rather than you are holding it, you simply have to let go of that desire. You simply have to let go of that cause of suffering. And once you are fully let go of, then you know it has been let go of. Now these are the three aspects towards the Second Noble Truth. And then the Third Noble Truth. So once the cause has been let go of, now the result, that is the suffering, also has reduced and then ultimately disappeared. Now there is the possibility of free from suffering, or freedom from suffering. There is no suffering right now. The suffering, or the already arisen suffering, has completely ceased. Suffering has disappeared. As a result, there is a kind of a peace. There's a kind of a calming down. There's a kind of a happiness. Peace is available. And Buddha says, one should realize this peace. So, there is the cessation of dukkha. The cessation of dukkha should be realized. So, not only that you are recognizing suffering, you are recognizing the cause of suffering. And once the cause being recognized, you let it go. And as a result, you feel the suffering also now gone. As a result, now there is a peace in the mind. And you are realizing that peace. So, you need to appreciate that peace. You are not ignoring that peace, rather you are appreciating that peace. You need to welcome that peace. You are recognizing that peace. And therefore the three aspects to Third Noble Truth is that one is able to recognize this peace in the mind, or the cessation of suffering. And one has recognized it, one has realized it. And one should be realized it, and as a result one has realized it. So these are the three aspects. So now this recipe has to be practiced again and again. So it is not that you recognize a suffering once and then you recognize its cause and then you let it go, and as a result you are realizing the cessation of suffering just once. It is not enough. Again and again, 1001 times, you have to again and again apply these Four Noble Truths, and as a result you need to practice it. So this whole practice become the Fourth Noble Truth. So that is the Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada. There is a methodology, there is a practice, there is a method to continuously maintain peace in the mind. So that is to recognize suffering and to know the cause and to let it go. And once you feel the peace, you have to appreciate it and you have to be with it. So likewise, again and again, this recipe has to be practiced. This recipe has to be practically practiced in your mind. So that becomes the Fourth Noble Truth. Where bhave tabbang. One has to cultivate this recipe. One has to cultivate this practice. So this is, in a way, we can say in a nutshell, how one can incorporate Four Noble Truths into one's practice. And Buddha says if one is developing like this, and one is able to recognize various defilements and apply these Four Noble Truths, then one may be able to remove Sakkayaditti, that is the personality view, and one is able to remove doubt, vichikicca, and one can eliminate various rituals which one understand it is not useful. Because previously you might have thought that various rituals, various rules and observances may be useful for a freedom of mind. But as a result of practicing Satipatthana and these Four Noble Truths, that you may understand it's a very much like a pure patipada, a practice. So that alone makes the mind free, so you may drop various beliefs, other wrong beliefs, wrong practices, observances, and as a result, Buddha says there are three fetters would be removed or eliminated from the mind. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. And if you have any questions related to today's sermon, or if you have questions, reports related to your practice, now I can open the session.
Chatu is not there today, so I have to read the questions.
Right.
We have five questions.
Yeah.
Question number one is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, can you please explain in Sabbhasa Sutta, is sak- Kaya ditti, unwise attention, leading to Michcha ditti, wrong view. Have I understood correctly these two Pali words?
Yep.
Does this all arise due to self-view? I was also not clear about the six components of wrong view. Probably you might explain this again today. If so, please ignore my question. Much merits to it.
Yeah. Six components of wrong view. Yeah, actually, I need to go back to the last week's session. Now, say for example, we are introduced a self to the picture from our childhood. Say for example, as kids, from our first few years, say first, second, age third, like that. So we didn't have much kind of a self-view. And we are able to play with others and we simply laugh with others. So it's a kind of a beautiful life in a way. But later, we go to the school and we learn from our parents and slowly we include a personality view. We recognize ourselves as an individual. I am so and so. I am a boy. I am a girl. I am this. I am that. So I am given a particular name. So likewise, this is my house, this is my father, this is my mother. So likewise, now we are sort of complicating the picture and we call it as learning. So in a way, we are slowly, we are polluting the mind in a way. So we are sort of confusing the mind, polluting the mind, and we are incorporating so much of perceptions, lot of signs, languages and everything to the picture. Now, in the meditation, so we may be able to time to time recognize how we are incorporating this self-view. Time to time understand how one is thinking in line with a self. And at that each time, you may feel unhappy. You may feel frustrated. You may feel uncertain. Because whenever there is a self-view, there is a kind of a frustration. There is some sort of an unhappiness available in the mind. Now, in the Sabbasana Sutta, so Buddha says, when you are thinking in terms of I, thinking that there is an I at the present, and what is, how this I came to the picture? How was I in the past? How I will be in the future? So you have a strong I component or strong I in the thought pattern, in the thought process. And now you want to protect this I. And you think there is this I was available in the past as well. I existed in the past and I am in the present and I will be in the future. So always there is an I, personality view, and you may be thinking in that line. So that is what, share again the screen. So this is what Buddha mentioned. So related to the past, one can think in many different ways. Always there is an I. And again related to the future, one is thinking, including or attributing to a person, to a I. And again in the present, you are thinking in terms of I. Am I existing? Am I not? How am I? What am I? So likewise, you are thinking. So Buddha says, if one think in like this, one may get confused and one's mind may ultimately sort of conditioned to many different types of wrong views. So there Buddha explains, self exists for me. So there is a kind of a self. Always there is a self, there is an I, there is an individual. And more you think it, more and more that way of thinking become solid. Or that become engraved to the mind. So that way of thinking become sort of a fixed view with the mind. So you are sort of end up with some kind of a fixation in the mind. So they are in how you thought may define how you get fixated. Now, one kind of wrong view, Buddha say, is there is a self existing for me. So you may sort of now thinking there is a self, and that self has existed in the past and also available in the present and may exist in the future. So this is a kind of a self view. It's a kind of a attaditti. There's a self, atma, and no self exists for me. And there may be another, the opposite. So in a way of how you thought, so you may encounter, okay, there is no self. And then I perceive self with a self. Now you have a self, and with that self you are perceiving the existing self. And then I perceive not self with the self. And sometimes you may feel there is no self, but there is a lasting self, existing self. With that, you are time to time observing non-self. And I perceive self with not self. So these are various combinations. There are many different ways of conditioning the mind. And ultimately, so this self is the one, say, thinking. This self is the one perceiving. This self is the one observing. This self is the one hearing. This self is the one tasting, cognizing. So likewise, you have incorporated a self to the picture, and with respect to that self, your mind has become fairly confused in a way. Now these are the many different wrong views Buddha mentioned here. So therefore Buddha says, when we are thinking like this, so our mind get utterly confused, and you may get lost in a thicket of wrong views, a jungle of wrong views, a wilderness of wrong views. And ultimately dittasava, the fetter, also going to be further strengthened because of this wrong way of thinking. So this is what I want to clarify. So I think I answered the question. We can go back to the next question, or if you have not satisfied with my answer, you can ask again. But anyway, when we are practicing, more and more we stop thinking like this. So that is where the important thing, basically what Buddha mentioned here is, if you unskillfully think like this, you may get further confused. Your mind become more fixated. But on the other hand, our practice is taking us away from this way of thinking. Rather, the practice helps us to properly understand what is really going on. Say, for example, when you are dealing with Kayanupassana, so probably you can remember we were discussing what you call Dhatu Manasikara. So we may also have started with a self view, that is I. So I am looking at the body. So I am looking at walking. So this is the way we also might have started. But slowly as we move forward, so you may recognize it is nothing available here, but rather a series of movements, a series of sensations. Constantly there are various sensations coming and going. Various types of element characteristics appear and disappear. Nothing else. Say for example, you are constantly looking at various movements of the, say, your steps, your legs, and various other sensations available at your foot, and say hardness, softness, heaviness, roughness, and movements, vibrations. So likewise, more and more when you are looking at this objectively, more and more you will understand it is nothing but a series of element characteristics. And again, you can apply the same understanding to outside. Even the outside, what is available, are nothing but a series of element characteristics. So there are slowly this self view is diluted, and because you can't recognize a self, you can't recognize an individual here, Rather, a series of element characteristics are always manifesting due to various causes. So likewise, slowly the self-view, the satta sanya, puggala sanya, the thinking that there is a person, thinking that there is a self, thinking that there is an individual, thinking that there is an I. So that wrong view going to be slowly diluted, slowly removed, and later you can recognize, even though this is kind of an insight is possible, time to time still you are creating a self. Say for example, you are going in front of a mirror. So at that time you feel, you see the image of the body. There you immediately attribute, oh, this is I. So I am beautiful, I am now old. So likewise, you are again, kind of a self-view is arising. So you may understand, it is not that constantly you are creating a self, but rather time to time you are creating a self. So there you recognize it is not a available self that you are talking, but rather it is a created self. Time to time created self. Time to time manipulated self. Manifested self that you are talking. It is not a constant self. It is not an unchanging self. But rather it is a mind-created self, mind-made self that we are trying to protect. So likewise, various insights are possible along with the path. So therefore Buddha talks many different aspects about this whole process. And we'll take some other suttas, how Buddha is sort of giving us various methods to overcome this wrong view. And I think we can now move towards the other question.
Question number 2 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you so much for the simple but profound explanations of sutta linking to the practice of mindfulness. Based on your Dhamma talk on Sabbhasava Sutta, it seems that our journey can be broadly divided into 2 areas. The first one, or the prerequisite, is the formal mindfulness practice to develop various tools. The other aspect is dealing with the taints and latent tendencies which may come in day-to-day life using these tools and understanding the mind. If this is correct, Bhante, shall we assume one who starts the mindful journey may spend 2 to 3 years on the formal practice and then a lifetime on dealing with the taints and latencies?
Yeah, so I can agree with you. And that time period may vary from person to person. Say for example, one may get on to this higher practice that indicates that one is recognizing various defilements in the mind, latent tendencies in the mind, taints in the mind. So that is in a way type of a higher practice where one now know the path, but still one haven't fully purified oneself yet. Still a lot of defilements are available, but you know how to tackle them. Now, in order to get into this level, you may, the time taken may vary from person to person. One may do continuous practice for 1 year, and now he is fairly confident that he can now handle it, and now he is constantly looking at his mind, even in other daily activities, and now he is able to recognize various defilements, and he honestly sort of trying to remove them or to overcome them. To another person, suppose he may take 3 years to have this confidence that he now understand, okay, this is the path to practice and this is how I need to overcome various defilements. So in order to get that confidence, he may take another, say, 3 years. So likewise, the initial practice, as you said, is the development of the mindfulness, or rather the establishment of the mindfulness, and then the development of various insights. So that is the second stage. And ultimately the third stage is the practice of Noble Eightfold Path. So there you already have fairly, to some extent, you have understood the path. You know what to do, but yet it is not completed. So you have to further enhance your practice, further improve mindfulness and wisdom in order to fully overcome various defilements. So therefore, I can agree with your statement.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a sitting practice question. Dear Venerable Sir, my sitting practice is being mindful on breathing, and this is my recent experience reflection. I start focusing on the body, and it is quite easy to shift to breath and observe the differences of in-breath and out-breath. As Venerable Sir explained in the Anapanasati Sutta, after I start observing the full breath, it starts to become subtle and start fading, finally reducing to a pulse, which is not observable. When I am in this spacious space, with a relaxed and enjoyable mood, thought starts to arise. If I don't explore the thoughts and be composed on my observation, they fade away. However, after some time, I slowly get carried away by a thought. And when I realize this happened, the focus or the mind bounces back to the spacious space again. This happens multiple times. I know I'm drifting away and I know I'm bouncing back. I'm not doing anything specific, but knowing and observing only. This happens until the end of the session. Last 30 minutes of the sitting practice. This happens until the end of the session. Last 30 minutes of the sitting practice. I feel like a yo-yo bouncing from one place to the other, still attached to a string. Any guidance from the Venerable Sir is highly appreciated. Much merits for this valuable program.
Yeah, you can be happy because you now have the opportunity to play yo-yo as well. So anyway, so this is true because this is how you are recognizing various states in the mind. And once you are recognizing it, again you land on the space, or you land again back in the calmness, the peace of the mind. Again, there is another attachment, there's another defilement, another thought arise in the mind. Again, you are applying your attention to it. Again, you are applying the mindfulness to it. As a result, again, it will fade away. Again, you land back on the peace of the mind. Again, there is another thought coming in the mind. Again, you apply mindfulness to it. Again, as a result, it will fade away. Again, you land back on the peace of mind. Now, it appears like a never-ending process, but it will, at least for some time, it will end. So don't worry. It's a matter of continuation, and after some time you may feel that the rate of thoughts may reduce, the frequency of thoughts may reduce, and at the moment it seems like you are getting various thoughts one after the other, but with the continuous application of mindfulness, continuous practice, you may in sooner you may be able to encounter that no thought region. There are no any attachment at all. Mind may feel fairly quiet and fairly peaceful. And at that time you may understand, okay, as a result of my continuous practice, never giving up, so there is now I encounter kind of a lasting peace in the mind. But still it is fragile. Don't think that you're completed. Rather, at least you may be able to recognize kind of a thought-free region, trouble-free region, or suffering-free region in the mind. So it's a kind of a peaceful region. It's a kind of a quietude in the mind, spaciousness in the mind. Clarity of mind is completely present at that moment, and you should be able to recognize it. So rather than feeling bored in that area, and rather than feeling drowsy in that area, you should be able to be with that area. You need to recognize that area. You need to appreciate that peace in the mind. So therefore, you please continue your practice. You may be able to get on to or land on to that peace of mind with some time. Yeah.
Thank you, Venerable Sir. Question number 4 of 6. This is a walking practice question. Dear Bhante, during my walking practice, after 15 to 20 minutes, when the mind is following the walking process without any effort and in a relaxed state, I start hearing a continuous high-pitched metallic sound in the background. I have heard this as sound of silence, and this is not an issue and can be used as a meditation object as well if required. When I search for, I cannot hear it. But when the mind relaxes and at a certain time of the practice, I start hearing it naturally. Throughout the last month, in every practice session, I notice this sound. What is Bhante's advice on this?
Yeah. Actually, as you clearly recognize, so if you are if you are trying to search for it, so that indicates your mind is not satisfied. So you are sort of making a sankhara. You are sort of introducing defilements to the mind. But rather, if you are completely peaceful and you are able to simply allow things to happen, then only the mind calms down. So until we are doing something, until we are sort of being in a kind of a struggle, so this kind of sound of silence is not going to appear. But rather, when you are peaceful, when you are in a sort of a satisfied state, you are in a calmness, and you allow things to happen, you are not searching anything, you are not expecting anything, then mind calms down, then mind settles. So once the mind is settled, so this peace of mind is available, and when your mind is attuned to kind of a frequency, there you may start to hear the sound of silence. So this sound of silence also may disappear, and we don't need to expect that it may last forever. Rather, you can keep it as a background, and you can continue a practice. And actually, you can't use that as a meditation object, because it's a kind of a background sound going on, and you can't actually use it as a meditation object for vipassana. But rather, you allow it to happen, you keep it aside, and you are now trying to observe various phenomena coming and going with the available mindfulness, with the available concentration. Say, for example, you are observing various feelings in the body, and various feelings are arising and they are passing away. And while you do that Vedananupassana, in the background, if you pay attention, you can recognize that sound of silence. So likewise, the practice may go independent from that sound of silence, and there may be a possibility that sound of silence ultimately will disappear, and you don't need to worry much about this. And time to time it may reappear, and it might even not appear another time. Yeah.
Just check with you, so an answer. We have two more questions, and we'll probably go a little bit over time. If that's all right.
Yeah.
So it's the question number 5 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, for the first time, I tried mindfulness of feelings at your guided session today. It was quite pleasing experience, and I could observe that the mindfulness, concentration, and relaxation developing with the observations. After some time, the breath appeared. Since the breath was prominent, I started observing, as I know, in breathing mindfulness. The breath faded away quickly after a few minutes of observation, and I started feeling the body posture. After some time focusing on the body, I could start observing the feelings again. After some time, the breath appeared again. The observation seemed jumping from one to the other. This was not an issue, and I could keep calm and relaxed observing observations throughout the session. But thought Bhante can advise if anything specific to do in this situation with metta. Is there another question?
Yeah, I think the switching between various objects is no problem. Because as you know, for mindfulness, there is no any specific object. But rather, you are experiencing continuous mindfulness. But the objects are going to change. And it may change from one category to the other category. And even the same object is going to change. It has its various paces, the rising pace and the passing away pace. And again, it may reappear, not the same object, but another object may appear at another place. And again, that category may going to change. As you explained, in the first category, you have explained or experienced the feelings. And next category, you have experienced various, sensations. That is due to the breathing. And again, you switch back to feelings. So likewise, the object category also can vary. But all these things tell us the same story. So therefore, that is why change is not an issue, because you are observing the behavior of all these phenomena. Feelings are behaving in a particular manner, and thoughts are behaving in a particular manner, and again the sensations are behaving in a particular manner, and if you say elements are also behaving in a particular manner, and almost they are in the same manner, the same type of behavior they all have. And Buddha very beautifully mentioned that there are three aspects to each to all conditioned phenomena. That is, there is a arising, there is a passing away, and there is a continuous change from a recent point to the passing away point. So this is the typical nature of all conditioned phenomena. So therefore, there is no problem in looking at many different objects, because ultimately they are showing or they are teaching us the same story. And the other hand, on the other hand, when you are looking at breath, so rather than putting a name to it, considering it as a what you call asasa, what is this, in-breath or out-breath, so rather than putting that label to it, see how you are able to look at it objectively in a more primary level. So kind of a sensation, it's a kind of a knowing, kind of a feeling even. If you want to put the label of feeling, you can put it there as well. I mean, not the label in the sense, because you are dealing with feelings. Now you can look at the in-breath and out-breath also in the feeling tone. So in-breath is producing a neutral feeling, and that also arises and pass away. And out-breath is producing a neutral feeling, that also arising and passing away. So if you like, you can continue looking at everything in the everything as feelings, or else you can jump to the other side, thinking that these are sensations, these are element characteristics, and you can look at in that angle as well. Actually, you can play like that, so that whatever preferred, you can apply. Yeah.
Question number six, is the last question, is on sitting practice. As a beginner, oftentimes I found myself distracted by a lot of ideas in my mind and hard to focus on my breath. I also found it is really difficult to step back and not trapped in arising emotions when unwise attention arises. I'm wondering if there is any method that can help with this problem. That's the another question.
Yeah, could you repeat the question, Chamila?
As a beginner, oftentimes I found myself distracted by a lot of ideas in my mind and hard to focus on my breath. I also found it is really difficult to step back and not trapped in arising emotions when unwise attention arises. I'm wondering if there is any method that can help with this problem.
Yeah, actually, it is difficult to immediately address emotions unless you develop fair amount of mindfulness using Kayanupassana. Because if we are trying to answer emotions directly by looking at them, it is getting, as you said, you may get further strengthen the emotion, you get caught up with this emotion. But on the other hand, if you develop fair amount of mindfulness using Kayanupassana, say using breathing practice, using walking, say rising and falling, you're using whatever the technique that you which is applicable to you, and that way you are strengthening mindfulness. That way you recognize various thoughts. Ultimately, I mean, you start with Kayanupassana and you are developing mindfulness, and slowly you may be able to recognize various thoughts. On such situation, you understand, I mean, thoughts come and go, and you are not always responsible for these thoughts, and they are merely visitors. If you like, you can keep them, you can feed them, but if you don't, you can simply allow them to go. So there you have a better chance to look at emotions. So because you have already established mindfulness, you know how to deal with various thoughts. Now suppose there are emotions going to happen. Actually, emotions are also not immediately happening. Mostly, there are various signs, or what we call perceptions, various marks going to happen in the mind, and then little thoughts, short thoughts going to happen, and various feelings going to happen. Now we start to feed them. Now we are start to add to them. And now we are constructing on top of them. Now it is developing to emotional level. Now it's kind of overwhelming emotion. Now likewise, each and every emotion has their beginning and sort of a growing stage because of our contribution, because we are feeding them, we are strengthening them, and ultimately emotions going to overwhelm us. So in order to handle it, we should be able to recognize at their early stages. Then we can understand it. Then you can understand, okay, I'm getting angry, I'm getting sort of emotional, I'm getting, say, sorrowful, I'm feeling bad, I'm feeling depressed. So likewise, you feel how it is gradually happening, because you have a better mindfulness already available in the mind, and you are able to understand from its early stages, from its inception. So in order to do that, you need to have fair amount of mindfulness already available, so that you can actually develop easily using Kayanupassana, not using, say, immediately looking at the, I mean, not immediately from the emotions themselves. Yeah.
So that's the end of the questions. We have two announcements to make. One is that the document that Soinuhasa shares on these sessions are available in the website, where we have the past recording sessions. So the current one is there, as well as all the previous ones amalgamated into one document. So you should be able to get it from the website. And also, another announcement is regarding a retreat that Soinuhasa is conducting. It's a distant retreat starting tomorrow, 14th to the 12th of December. So it's a in Sinhala medium, but we'll take questions in English, and there's no registration needed, and beginners are most welcome to join. In the chat window, Sudranga, can you post the Zoom link for everyone to join, how to join it? And Swaminuasa, do you want to mention anything about that? Or just...
No, actually it starts on tomorrow. In Sri Lanka's time, you may get the precepts and brief introduction to the practice from Venerable Dhammakusala at around 9:20 a.m. And then at 1 p.m. we have the question and answer session. And at 4:30 p.m. we have the Dhamma sermon. So it will last till 18th, that is the Friday. Yeah.
Thank you, Vante.
Yeah.
So we've come to the end of the session, and I'd like to thank Soinuhasa for spending his valuable time coming and doing these sessions for us. I think we have a lot of questions today, as we normally do. And I'd like to thank everyone for joining. And a quick question. There's a question saying whether we can have a retreat during Christmas break, but I think we already have the distance retreats. Suranga would like to mention, Swaminathan, would you like to say anything about that?
I think Suranga and others are preparing a retreat from that days, starting from 23rd. They have Sydney retreat, and I think Canberra retreat. I think Suranga can make a notice about that.
Yeah, we will send a mail again with all these details and answer. So
yeah.
Tatu mentioned some time back about these two retreats, 5-day Sydney retreat and 5-day Canberra retreat, starting from 23rd and going till 2nd January. So we will send mail to everyone with all the details again. So anybody can join online, and we will have the Zoom link and how to connect and all the information in those emails.
Yeah.
So just mention specifically the Canberra one is done by Soinuhasa, and it will be conducted in English. So, and it has the Q&A session and as well as the Dharma talk. So, we share the links around when we finalize the program. I think they are still finalizing the sessions and the times. So, that will be sent around. So, I would like to thank Mate again.
Yeah.
Terwan Saranai.
Terwan Saranai. Suki Hotu.